800-635-6303, 800-635-6303. That's 800-635-6303.
Not all benefits listed may be available on all plans or in a single benefit package. Enrollment in the prescribed plan type may be limited to certain times of the year unless you qualify for a special enrollment period. No obligation to enroll.
Some cross-border bickering about the president's wall proposal continues as USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
President Donald Trump insisting at an appearance in Nashville on Tuesday night that Mexico will pay for his planned border wall.
I don't want to cause a problem. I don't want to cause. But in the end, Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
About an hour after the statement by Trump, the Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, responded and tweeted, quote, "No, Mexico will never pay for a wall," adding, "Not now, not ever." Peña Nieto then repeated the tweet in Spanish. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
In an effort to create more long-term job opportunities, Sacramento, California Chick-fil-A franchise owner Eric Mason will raise his staff's hourly wages to as much as $18 an hour. Mason also said he will be providing paid time off for employees as well. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
As details continue to emerge about how the Golden State Killer was apprehended, we know that it was from doing some DNA online tests that you can find anywhere. There's all sorts of different kits. But what does that mean long-term for you and your privacy? Carl Zimmer is author of a new book titled She Has Her Mother's Laugh. He's been writing about science for years. He explains what this all means for you in the long term.
If we are going to be really, you know, enthusiastic in sharing our DNA with each other to learn things about our genealogy, well, you know, we're putting our DNA out there in public, and that can be used by people to do all sorts of things. Now, in this case, you know, I think it's great that an alleged serial killer may have been pulled off the streets using this method. But, you know, you could envision other ways in which this could be an invasion of privacy by finding people through their relatives using these databases. And so, you know, I think that it's going to lead to a lot of new protections and rules about genetic privacy online, you know, along the lines of what we see, you know, in terms of our social media data. You know, we're really trying to balance the advantages of going public with our heredity and keeping it private.
And finally, it was back on this date in 1988 when former President Ronald Reagan arrived in Moscow for summit talks with Mikhail Gorbachev. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
USA Radio News.
President Trump weighed in on the Roseanne Barr controversy today on Twitter. The president said Bob Iger of ABC called Valerie Jarrett to let her know that ABC does not tolerate comments like those made by Roseanne Barr. The president said he never received a call from Iger regarding some of the horrible statements made about him on ABC. Or he just didn't get the call. Today at the White House, President Trump signed the Right to Try Act, which will give terminally ill patients greater access to experimental treatments.
Now, with the passage of this bill, Americans will be able to seek cures right here at home, close to their family and their loved ones. We are finally giving these wonderful Americans the right to try. So important.
Elsewhere, quick look at your numbers on Wall Street today. Currently, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up right around 250 points. This is USA Radio News.
Medicare rules are confusing. They should be. There are over 130,000 pages of regulations. There's Part A through D, Medicare Advantage, and Medigap. According to the CMS, there are government programs available that can help you pay for your medical expenses. Choosing the right Medicare plan is a really big deal. The wrong choice can cost you a lot of money, and the right choice can put more money in your pocket. Call one of our licensed representatives today. At 65 Plus Medicare, our free service can show you you a plan that will maximize your Medicare benefits, ensure you are taking advantage of all available government assistance programs, and save you money. Call now.
800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. That's 800-635-6303.
Not all benefits listed may be available on all plans or in a single benefit package. Enrollment in the described plan type may be limited to certain times of the year unless you qualify for a special enrollment period. No obligation to enroll.
Some cross-border bickering about the president's wall proposal continues as USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
President Donald Trump insisting at an appearance in Nashville on Tuesday night that Mexico will pay for his planned border wall.
I don't want to cause a problem. I don't want to cause. But in the end, Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
About an hour after the statement by Trump, the Mexican president, Enrique Peña Nieto, responded and tweeted, quote, "No, Mexico will never pay for a wall," adding, "Not now, not ever." Peña Nieto then repeated the tweet in Spanish. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
In an effort to create more long-term job opportunities, Sacramento, California Chick-fil-A franchise owner Eric Mason will raise his staff's hourly wages to as much as $18 an hour. Mason also said he will be providing paid time off for employees as well. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
As details continue to emerge about how the Golden State Killer was apprehended, we know that it was from doing some DNA online tests that you can find anywhere. There's all sorts of different kits. But what does that mean long-term for you and your privacy? Carl Zimmer is author of a new book titled She Has Her Mother's Laugh. He's been writing about science for years. He explains what this all means for you in the long term.
If we are going to be really, you know, enthusiastic in sharing our DNA with each other to learn things about our genealogy, well, you know, we're putting our DNA out there in public, and that can be used by people to do all sorts of things. Now, in this case, you know, I think it's great that an alleged serial killer may have been pulled off the streets using this method. But, you can envision other ways in which this could be an invasion of privacy by finding people through their relatives using these databases. And so, you know, I think that it's going to lead to a lot of new protections and rules about genetic privacy online, you know, along the lines of what we see, you know, in terms of our social media data. You know, we're really trying to balance the advantages of going public with our heredity and keeping it private.
And finally, it was back on this date in 1988 when former President Ronald Reagan arrived in Moscow for summit talks with Mikhail Gorbachev. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Hi, welcome to Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy. We have a special episode today. We're really glad to have you watching in, streaming live on Facebook from the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce radio station. It is Talented People, and I am Jeannie Murphy, but we're filling in a spot today because we are featuring Richard Scuderi, who you probably know on Wednesdays at 2 o'clock. His show, his program comes on, but today we're going to talk about his book, The Lonely Boy, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about more about him in case you don't know more about him, and also his appearance this weekend on June 2nd, Saturday, at 11 a.m. at the Barnes & Noble in Bridgewater. So welcome to this special show, and thanks for watching in again. Richard, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for doing this with me, Jeannie. You're terrific and talented yourself, by the way.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that's not about me. It's so much fun to be able to talk to you. I know that I'm a little privileged just to knowing a little bit more about the book because I did read the book and had you on the show earlier this year.
Sure.
But you're a best-selling author, sold out at least 3 times from Barnes & Noble, which is phenomenal. The fact that they're even having you as an author discussion appearance and book signing on Saturday here in Bridgewater is another challenge that you overcame because there's just not a lot of books that are selling in order for them to look for, other than celebrities, politicians, and the like.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm very humbled by this, but I think as much as I try to write a good book, a lot of it has to do with timing. I find that we're in a period of time where things aren't terrific out there, and I see more anxiety and depression with people than I ever have, particularly youth, a lot of depressed young people out there. I don't know what that has to do with. Maybe people aren't communicating as much because they're on social media all the time. They're on the phone. But I see a lot of that around. I hear a lot of it around. And also anger. I see a lot of angry people around. And I just think The Lonely Boy happened to fall into a time where that was, you know, what people were talking about. And for me, having lived with anxiety and depression my entire life, I feel very strongly about kind of being the poster child, if you will, at least the local poster child, that someone could have some sort of a depressive disorder and function and do a radio show and a television show and all the dumb things that I try to do, that there is light at the end of the tunnel, because when you're in the depression, you feel like you'll never be the same again. But in fact, like everything else in life, it does pass and you can get beyond it. And I'm just trying to say, you know, I'm with you and I'm out there and there's things that you can do.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say you're almost kind of putting your hand up and volunteering to be the poster boy, which
sure.
is very, very, very unusual.
Sure.
Most people, it's a stigma. They're not interested in changing that. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, wait a second, I have my story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to tell your story.
Sure.
And then we're going to lead into some of the other things that you do for the community and otherwise. And to your comment about the noticing the anger and also
sure.
that depression in the young. I think you're right on track.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting between the, like almost the second generations, the millennials and so on, as they call them, and even younger, what you talk about, the communication,
sure.
how they communicate and relate to us.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of challenges in there. So please, so let's start by you telling us your story.
Well, you know, my story starts relatively early on. I have great recall, so I'm very fortunate. Or maybe I'm supposed to have great recall so I can tell the story. I often think that, you know, I never had children. So I think in life you have to give birth to something. And I'm starting to feel, 50 years old, that maybe this is it, that maybe this is my cause. And my cause may not be raising children or bringing great people into the world, but maybe helping some of us like myself that are a little bit broken. And with that recall, I can go back to, which I've said in the book, which I've read in the book, and go back to my earliest memory of depression, which me started in seventh grade. Typically, when you're going into that the beginning of the teenage years, often that's where things start to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that came out with a depression that I didn't even know what it was at the time. And it was my seventh grade teacher, Mr. Veda, at St. Mary's of Mount Virgin School in New Brunswick, that called my mother in and said, I think your son is depressed. And at that point, depression was really something that was never talked about. So my mother took that very seriously, and she talked to my dad. She says, well, I want you to talk to him. He wasn't able to do it. Not because he was ashamed, but talking, especially back in the 70s, talking about a mental illness is not something that they did. So for me, my mom was not going to let that go the way it was. And she got the local Catholic priest to speak to me and talk about that, which, if you read the book, you know, brought up some other issues and so on. But I think early on, Jeannie, when we have things happen to us, I think there's more of a defense mechanism. And I know Ruth is going to come at the end and talk specifically about those things. But at least for me, as a younger person, I was able to get bounced back from things more quickly than I am now, which I did. And then I was good for a while. But unfortunately, in 1987, my mother, beautiful, healthy woman, was diagnosed with acute myelocytic leukemia. In fact, it was a Friday night, and she was just going out with my sister to look for, I think, a prom dress or something. And the phone rang. We had just eaten dinner, normal day, young family, and the doctor said, get to the hospital immediately. And 5 minutes later, the lab at the hospital called and said, get to the hospital immediately. And unfortunately, my mother was a very thin, very beautiful woman, but she didn't have a lot of resistance. So she went from diagnosis, a woman going out on a Friday night to shop with her daughter for a prom dress, to death. So at 21, about 6 weeks before I graduated college, I dealt with my own mortality. My mom was gone, and I had to face my young life without her, which really sent me into a depression that lasted a much longer period of time. When I went back to school, I had a press professor in particular that was worried about me. And he said, I want you to talk to someone. I want you to talk to a professional psychologist who was on staff at the college, Montclair State College. And when I told her my stories of depression, she said to me, how are you standing upright? You know, how are you doing this? How are you getting on with your life? Again, in the earlier years, at least for me, I had more, I don't know, I took it more in stride. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think everybody's life journey is different. I think that maybe at this point in my life, I went through more than most, but we all go through things at different times. That doesn't mean to say somebody's not going to have a problem 6 months from now. So I try to be sensitive to other people. I often find when people are angry or not nice to me, my first impulse as a human being is to say, ugh, can't stand you. But then I've come to realize that people, it's not natural to be nasty. I think if someone is not nice, often it's because they're suffering. They've been through something or they can't share something. So I'm working very hard these days on being very open, not always easy to do, being very open and just letting people be who they are. But
I was just going to say, it's sure. Interesting. I saw, I mean, this is a classic movie. I'm sure you've probably never heard of it. It's called Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And it's back like 30, 40 years old. It's an old,
wow.
old movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it reminds me of what you're saying, because in the one of the scenes, it's about a family that's dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that the grandmother says is, there's a reason why people do the things they do.
Sure.
So when you're talking about that, like when you're like almost saying forgiveness is to, like, you're just going to give someone a VIP pass because there must be something that's causing them not to be unnaturally nasty.
Sure. You know, we live in the physical world. So in the physical world, you have to be somewhat fair and you also have to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. But for me, a lot of my healing, which I'm still a work in progress, is the fact of forgiving people, whether they deserve it or not. What you find in life is often when you're angry at somebody, you're the person carrying that. It's not affecting them, it's affecting you. So when you get beyond some of that anger and stuff with another person, it makes you feel better. And then maybe opens yourself up to other things. If you read the book, you'll understand this a little bit more. But I went through a very, very bad series of tragedies when I was 45. And life-changing tragedies, unfortunately. But what happened to me over time, when I began to forgive those people that brought me there, something very interesting happened. The energy changed. And all of a sudden, things are starting to happen. When we were sitting in the room before going on air, I was showing you some of the things that are going on in my life. And you're like, I mean, you're a media person. You know everything. You know, in 1 month, I'm in New Jersey Design Magazine. I'm in today's Home News Tribune.
My Central Jersey, yeah. But just let's be real,
okay.
Here. I'm just going to say, I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is Talented People, special episode today. Richard Scudero, you probably know him because his show is usually broadcasting right now. But we're talking about his event coming up at Barnes & Noble this weekend, June 2nd at 11 o'clock in Bridgewater. He's being featured. And so he's being humble when he talks about this My Central Jersey page, because if you look on here, he's got like almost a third of a page at least, and that is unheard of anymore as a feature for an author. And they, again, are part of the Courier News and USA Today, Gannett family. And for you to get that kind of write-up about your appearance is really a big deal, because what you're talking about is a big deal.
Well, you're very generous in that, and I do appreciate that. But I think the bigger picture for me is, what I was going back to was that when I forgave the people that weren't good to me, even though they didn't really deserve it, what happened is my energy changed, and all these good things are starting to happen in my life. And what I want to pass along to people, and that's the whole thing about The Lonely Boy, it isn't the Richard Scudero story. It is, maybe I'm a catalyst for what I'd like to have happen, and that is a movement towards kindness to each other and inclusion. And you know, we're seeing such horrible things when we watch the news about, you know, I thought the race riots were done in the 60s. I see separation in cultures and communities, in people really not being good to each other. And, you know, Oprah did something in the 90s that had a short window, and it was called Random Acts of Kindness.
Oh, yes.
Where, do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Where you go to a toll plaza and you pay the toll arbitrarily for the person behind you. Mm-hmm. You try to smile every day walking down the street. You say hello to people. I try to do that now. You know, and as a depressed person, doing that, interacting with people, I know it sounds stupid. When you get sort of a response back, it does make you feel better.
I'm sure. Well, I can tell you, it's funny that you mentioned that, because even just walking down the street, depressed or not depressed, any person, saying hello to someone is almost like the strangest thing. People are afraid.
They're afraid.
It's like, I look down, like, are they looking at me? It's like so antisocial, our climate right now.
Jeannie, why do you think that's happened? Because I don't think it was always that way. I mean, I think about my parents and their generation. You walk down the street, you give somebody eye contact. Or, you know, for men, it was the nod. You know the nod?
Yes.
You give the nod, and it's like a respect thing, right?
It is a respectful thing, yes.
Where did that go away? What happened?
I don't know. It's very frigid.
Yeah.
I can say that when I do walk down the street, again, if I do say hello to someone, they're kind of shocked if they don't know me, like, who the hell are you? But with the kids, like the little ones, when they're walking along with their grandmother or their parents or something, they're all smiles.
Yeah.
So we're doing something wrong. From that point,
it's not natural not to be nice.
They can look down and be a little shy, but when they see a smile, they respond right back with a smile because they're like, that whatever has happened hasn't happened to them yet.
So they're affected over time by the negativity that we put on them. That's very sad.
It is sad. We can ask Ruth about it when she gets here because I know she'll probably have some perspective on it. But while I wanted everybody out there to know about the lonely boy, because I think you're right about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's the hardest of all.
Oh, it is.
It is. But it's like, oh my gosh, the story of Joseph and the Technicolor coat and everything. But with you, you want people to know, like you said, you want to be a catalyst. You want to be able to expose these things, bring them out, make people feel able to say how they feel.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about the discussion that you're going to have on Saturday. And also about the group that you guys facilitate here. Because I love the way that you want people to know about this stuff. And if we don't tell them, they don't know.
One of the best things that happened when I wrote the book, which I never thought anybody would even read. The book came out of a sort of a selfish, cathartic thing for me to do to work through some of the things that I've gone through in my life. But what happened when I published the book, it spoke to people. Because I think people had parts of it, you know, had similar experiences. Even the thing that I'm an Italian Catholic, people say, oh, I remember going to Brooklyn on Sunday for gravy and all that stuff. But people identified with the book. And I think that's what that's sort of what made it grow. So much so that I started getting questions from people. They were texting me. They were emailing me. They were calling me. And they were asking, how do I get through this? What would you do? How do I get through this?
Well, yeah, tell us.
And I began to realize that I'm not a trained professional. Maybe I'm good about sending out a message. I'm a broadcast and communications major. So maybe I'm good at articulating my work, you know, what I'm trying to say. But I didn't have those kind of skills. And my fear was that there may be somebody that really had a problem and I wouldn't want to do something that may, where they may harm themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate. And I will say this. There are no coincidences in life. I didn't
say
that well.
Agreed.
Things happen for a reason.
Every day,
hour. In the core of my depression, a friend of mine, her husband said, I saw that they were looking people for the radio station. You'd be perfect at it. And you know, it really, that was sort of the beginning of me coming out of my depression 4 years ago. In fact, I had somebody who was a guest, who was also a personal friend, and he said to me, you know, you're like this, and then it's time to go. And you're like, good afternoon, folks. And it's sort of, you know, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. When you have something to look forward to and stuff, you innately become happier. Sometimes I'm still struggling through it. I am not, you know, where I need to be. But it's better. But I find sometimes I'm out at a party, I'm entertaining, I'm doing stuff, and I'm like, hey, I'm not depressed. You know what I mean? Or I'm not sad, or I'm not scared. It's working. So that's, I think, all a part of the process of healing and being well. But to speak to what you were saying, the bigger picture is, and we talked about this, I think, when we were at Mariah Media, at your place, about the stigma. And that's the big thing. You know, I don't think Marianne and Henry Scuderi signed on for their oldest and only son to have a picture in the paper about mental illness. Well, I thought to myself after the article came out, I was really proud, and I thought, oh my God, to everybody I grew up with, I'm the face of mental illness. That's a really scary thing to be, right? But then I thought, no, actually, it's a pretty good thing to be.
Absolutely.
Because if I do something that may affect somebody's life or maybe help them or maybe even save their life, just one person, then I feel that maybe that I've done something with this book. You know, this book is, again, not about me. It's a collective life experience and things that we go through. And just maybe how you could navigate through it better.
Right. And like you talk about kind of like walking right at it, walking right into it.
Sure.
And saying, you know, I am a depressed person.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through the ringer.
Sure.
And I'm going to touch it. And
exactly.
The closer I get to it, the less, I guess, evil or fearful.
Fearful, sure.
It can be.
You know, it's like the monsters under the bed, because mm-hmm. when we hide things, they become significantly worse. What I have found is often...
That's very interesting.
We make things worse for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, I have a pimple, and I don't want people to see it. It becomes this huge thing.
Obsession.
But you know what? When you say, there it is, it's a pimple, it's going to go away, all of a sudden, all that... A fear, angst disappears. And that's what I thought about this. If I could say, all right, this happened to me. Some of it's embarrassing. Some of it's hurtful. Some things you don't necessarily want people to know. If I can be brave and say, okay, this is who I am and I'm still okay, maybe that will make it better for other people. There was about 10 years ago, I was watching the Today Show, I think. I just had it on the background when I was getting dressed to go to work. And this woman who was suffering from depression said out loud, she says, I had supportive parents, but this woman said, I had very unsupportive and unloving parents. I dropped my, toothbrush at the time because I couldn't believe somebody was brave enough to admit their truth. She wasn't trying to defame her parents. She was trying to validate what was going on in her life.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many people who had that same experience, whether it be a step-parent or a mother and a father in particular who had their own problems. But her bravery inspired other people. So on a small scale, I'm hoping that what I do will make people say, you know what, I am depressed, or maybe I am anxious, or maybe I have PTSD, and that's okay. That doesn't mean I'm unemployable. That doesn't mean that they're going to come get me and take me somewhere. Because that's what we've done in the media. We've made having an emotional problem crazy. You know, we made it something that was frightening, like a horror movie, and that's such a disgrace, I think.
Mm-hmm.
In the studies that I did to this, and I did a lot of research before I actually put the book out there because I didn't want to be erroneous in any way. 1 in 4 people, Jeannie, will suffer some form of mental illness in our lifetime. Not 1 in 50, 1 in 4.
I think that's a low number.
Sure,
I do, because of what you're talking about.
Sure,
it's depressed. It's part of the stigma.
Right.
If they know there's 1 in 4. There's probably 3 out of 4. Because,
yeah.
I mean, everybody, like you say, is going through different things. Like you were talking about the beginning,
sure.
Young kids,
mm-hmm.
our age, things are going on. The economy, like you say, the racism, the anxiousness,
yeah.
The everything. I know, I'm all about it. We had the event at Mariah, you know, and you were speaking out there. And there were so many things that you and Ruth had actually been able to discuss with the group of people who were there.
Sure.
All interested. They didn't care what the stigma was. They were openly discussing whatever their issues were.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting. So many little suggestions that, you know, you guys can make once the person starts to share a little bit. And to guide them to be okay with it.
Sure. You know, life is difficult for everybody. I think it's been set up that we have roadblocks, because if we were born and it was all ice cream all the time, you wouldn't evolve, you wouldn't change, you wouldn't get better as a person. So unfortunately, it's sort of the dark moments that bring the character. You know, I often equate it to, and probably I shouldn't be saying this, but some performers, like Elton John, I would say, and certain performers that went through dark periods of their life, that's when I think they gave
the best music.
Yeah, right? Don't you find that consistently? And I could think of 10. I don't want to discredit anybody. But their music, when they were going through their pain or their beginnings or their fears, it was reflected somehow. And it was just not syrupy. It was real. And I think people can always, and maybe that's why they identify with the Lonely Boy, because they can detect truth. And
mm-hmm.
I could say, maybe I'm not a terrific writer, you know, I need to improve in certain ways, but I will tell you this, that's truth.
Yes.
And people,
and honesty, you
right.
can read right through.
You
yeah.
You can always discern truth, I think. That's what people connect with.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when Seinfeld was on?
I love Seinfeld.
So when Seinfeld was on, people connected with it, because it was really truthful.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we take for granted that are, you know, kind of funny when you think about what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this is all about. It's just sort of accepting yourself, not taking yourself so seriously. This life thing, you're not going to get out of it alive, and you're going to go through stuff. So while you're here, try to have some joy if it's possible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
I think that's great. Do we have to go to a commercial break now? Because I think you're bringing in that
All right. So, you know, I think we're just going to do a news.
That's
we'll
great.
Regroup.
Okay.
And then we'll be back with more
All
after
right.
this.
This is good. Hope you're enjoying it. Talented People with Richard Scudieri.
USA Radio News.
President Trump weighed in on the Roseanne Barr controversy today on Twitter. The president said Bob Iger of ABC called Valerie Jarrett to let her know that ABC does not tolerate comments like those made by Roseanne Barr. The president said he never received a call from Iger regarding some of the horrible statements made about him on ABC. Or he just didn't get the call. Today at the White House, President Trump signed the Right to Try Act, which will give terminally ill patients greater access to experimental treatments.
Now, with the passage of this bill, Americans will be able to seek cures right here at home, close to their family and their loved ones. We are finally giving these wonderful Americans the right to try. So important.
Elsewhere, quick look at your numbers on Wall Street today. Currently, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up right around 250 points. This is USA Radio News.
Medicare rules are confusing. They should be. There are over 130,000 pages of regulations. There's Part A through D, Medicare Advantage, and Medigap. According to the CMS, there are government programs available that can help you pay for your medical expenses. Choosing the right Medicare plan is a really big deal. The wrong choice can cost you a lot of money, and the right choice can put more money in your pocket. Call one of our licensed representatives today. At 65 plus Medicare, our free service can show you a plan that will maximize your Medicare benefits, ensure you are taking advantage of all available government assistance programs, and save you money. Call now.
800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. 800-635-6303. That's 800-635-6303.
Not all benefits listed may be available on all plans or a single benefit package. Enrollment in the described plan type may be limited to certain times of the year unless you qualify for a special enrollment period. No obligation to enroll.
Some cross-border bickering about the president's wall proposal continues as USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
President Donald Trump insisting at an appearance in Nashville on Tuesday night that Mexico will pay for his planned border wall.
I don't want to cause a problem. I don't want to cause. But in the end, Mexico is going to pay for the wall.
About an hour after the statement by Trump, the Mexican president Enrique Peña Nieto responded and tweeted, quote, "No, Mexico will never pay for a wall," adding, "Not now, not ever." Peña Nieto then repeated the tweet in Spanish. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
In an effort to create more long-term job opportunities, Sacramento, California Chick-fil-A franchise owner Eric Mason will raise his staff's hourly wages to as much as $18 an hour. Mason also said he will be providing paid time off for employees as well. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
As details continue to emerge about how the Golden State Killer was apprehended, we know that it was from doing some DNA online tests that you can find anywhere. There's all sorts of different kits. But what does that mean long-term for you and your privacy? Carl Zimmer is author of a new book titled She Has Her Mother's Laugh. He's been writing about science for years. He explains what this all means for you in the long term.
If we are going to be really, you know, enthusiastic in sharing our DNA with each other to learn things about our genealogy, well, you know, we're putting our DNA out there in public, and that can be used by people to do all sorts of things. Now, in this case, you know, I think it's great that an alleged serial killer may have been pulled off the streets using this method. But, you know, you could envision other ways in which this could be an invasion of privacy by finding people through their relatives using these databases. And so, you know, I think that it's going to lead to a lot of new protections and rules about genetic privacy online, you know, along the lines of what we see, you know, in terms of our social media data. You know, we're really trying to balance the advantages of going public with our heredity and keeping it private.
And finally, it was back on this date in 1988 when former President Ronald Reagan arrived in Moscow for summit talks with Mikhail Gorbachev. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Talented People. We're having a special episode today featuring Richard Scudieri. You probably know him from his show that airs every Wednesday at 2 o'clock. But today we're talking about his book, The Lonely Boy. And he's going to be signing books and having an author discussion at the Barnes & Noble in Bridgewater, New Jersey, this coming Saturday, June 2nd at 11 a.m., which is really an unheard of type of event. So it's because of the subject matter of your book. That's why it's so popular, because people are very, very much interested in The Lonely Boy and mental, what Ruth Winchell-Beer shortly calls mental wellness instead of mental illness.
Sure.
And I love that.
I have to say I agree, because that's how we should approach it. We should approach it as a mental illness. It's more about a guide towards better health, right? Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think when your mental health is well, your physical health is better. You know, a lot of people in my life, I suffered a thyroid tumor when I was 27. And then at 45, I suffered a brain tumor. And I lost my eyesight, actually, which I'm very lucky and very grateful to have my eyesight back again. I don't take that for granted mm-hmm. after you have something like that. But, you know, who's to say that, not that that was the cause, but that didn't contribute to some of the tumors that I had in my life. You know, otherwise I've been an incredibly healthy person. Who's to say that somebody who's bottling up so much grief that doesn't eventually turn into something? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know, but I think that's true.
Sure.
Because I've seen people who don't talk too much, and they tend to be a lot less healthy.
Sure.
And it's like when you see people who are just constantly giving and just moving in the universe and blah, they're pretty healthy. But you were saying it was a direct hit to you.
Oh, sure. I say in the book, and probably I don't have the right to say this, but I say I've come to learn that tumors are just concentrated sadness.
Oh.
Now, maybe that's a very simplified version of what I happen to think. But think about the word disease. What is the word disease? It's dis-ease. It's an uncomfort, right?
Wow.
So if your brain is not functioning right, if you are unhappy as a human being, that has to have some effect on your body. I suffer from terrible GERD, and how is that not stress-related? We all have stresses in our life. It's how we manage the stresses. So if we start by changing how we think about having a problem and we're honest about it, then the stigma goes away. You know, when we were at Mariah Media at your event, Ruth's husband, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I feel terrible. Okay, maybe it was Steve. Well, these lessons, don't be mad at us.
Yeah.
He spoke a little bit about PTSD and people suffering from PTSD. And probably because those are military people and it's sort of a macho kind of a thing, they're not going to admit it. But then he said something that I couldn't believe. If you're in the military and you admit you have some sort of a problem, you're done.
You're out.
There's actually a physical reason where some people are afraid to come forward. And that something is only going to change if we start changing it. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just going to be people that are undiagnosed, suffer, and perhaps live shorter, unhappy lives because they're not getting the attention that they need. We have to pull the stigma out. And I would love to be that. I'd love that to be my mission, is to get rid of that stigma and say, you know what? We're okay now. And if you're not okay, it's all right to not be okay. The other thing that I want to bring up is medication. There are a couple things that they do to treat mental illness. First and foremost is counseling, right? People are used to going to a licensed counselor like Ruth or a psychologist or perhaps then a psychiatrist who prescribes medication. And there's a lot of thoughts about medication and so on. But I will tell you this. If the doctor says you need medication, take the medication.
Mm-hmm.
It's for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Often these medications aren't forever,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes you need medication, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's not a weakness. That's where you are in your life. You know, if God forbid, I'll just say somebody collectively had a heart problem, would you not take your heart medicine?
Exactly.
You know,
right.
Is there a stigma that you have a heart problem or a lung problem or your liver's not working? No. The brain is the most important organ in the body. You can have your liver regenerate. You can live with one lung. If you're brain dead, you're dead. You're dead. It's over. So why do we take the most important organ and then put like a different spin on it, that it's not a physical organ? It affects everything we do. And if you have to treat that with medication, just like you would your lungs or your heart or your liver, why is that any different?
It's no different. And it's great that you're bringing this out. She was mentioning also on that day of the spring mental health day, that there's been so many advancements in the technology of scanning the brain that they never had before.
Sure.
We're sitting here with the ability to how many megabytes to stream live on Facebook and send our messages instantaneously around the world. And they didn't even know that they could scan the brain for the hot spots, red and blue, like she was explaining.
Sure.
For anxiety, depression, all kinds of different things. And we're not doctors here, but I mean, to think about where technology is with everything we use all day long, and then to think about how it's not there with the brain.
Right.
That's incredible.
We're not taking mental health issues seriously enough.
Mm-hmm.
We're not putting research into it. We're not, we're not taking that part of our lives seriously enough, I think. I really do. What about suicide, especially with the teenagers? You know, there's this awful, you know, bullying always existed. You know, Johnny Lynch was waiting for me at the bus stop. What did I do to him? You know, but everybody, he's going to kill me. I'm bigger than him, though. I'll beat him up. Anyway, so, but there was always been bullying, but the cyberbullying is just brutal. And, you know, girls can be really cruel to each other.
It's terrible.
How many people, you know, when I was in seventh grade, there was a lovely girl. She was from Italy, and she had beautiful long dark hair in seventh grade. And the girls, because she didn't wash her long dark hair every day, would brutalize her. And by the end of seventh grade, she left school, and I never saw her again. This gorgeous girl who had it all over everybody. Kids are cruel. And now with the cyberbullying, it's so much easier to be a bully.
Yeah, it's awful.
And how many, you know, people, teenagers, young people, commit suicide because they're so broken and they're not able to articulate, I need help.
Right.
You know, that's what the lonely boy is. I was one of those people. Oh. And if you can say you're one of those people, then you help two other people that are that way, or 10 other people, and so on.
And you're on your way as well.
Exactly.
All right, let's invite her. Let's explain who's here today. I know you've probably seen her before on Talented People. I'm Jeannie Murphy. This is a special episode of Talented People here at the 2 o'clock hour on Wednesday at the Hunterdon County Chamber with Richard Scuderi, so you can learn more about him and his book, The Lonely Boy. And then, as you know, Ruth Altamaro Roll, she's the host of the Counselor's Chat show at 12 o'clock on Wednesdays. And she was just recently doing the Spring Mental Health Wellness Day. And Richard Scuderi and her are kind of hosting their own community group, as well as supporting each other. Richard is going to be doing a book signing and author discussion on Saturday, June 2nd at 11 a.m. at Barnes & Noble. And you're going to be there as well. Welcome to the show, Ruth.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We're so glad you're here because we are going to fill in some of the blanks, right?
You know,
Sorry.
That seemed so regal, didn't it?
I was like,
oh my God, is there are the royal couple here? Is there honeymoon? Is Flemington, New Jersey on the itinerary?
Like it should be on the show. That music is a good thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ruth, very early on at the station, again, no coincidences, introduced herself to me, incredibly warm. And when I wrote the book, as I had told you, so much outpouring right away. You know, I don't know technology that well. I'm a little bit of an older head. But somehow, if people don't have your phone number, they can call you on Messenger.
Oh, right. So I've learned that.
I was getting phone calls all over, you know, all over the, you know, the country, believe it or not. Not just regionally, phone calls from people that were looking for answers, that were looking for help, that were looking for me to maybe help or try to, you know, solve their problems. And again, early on, I felt that's a big responsibility. With no education. And then it just sort of dawned on me. We passed in the hallway once. I think we were maybe at the old station, or maybe it was here. But we passed in the hallway, and I thought to myself, that's the person I should talk to. That's the person who I should talk to. And then Ruth was very gracious, as she is with everything she does. And we discussed it a little bit. And I said, I think I want to do something. I think, you know, I need to do something. You gave birth to something. You put it out there. And now when people are asking for your help, you have to do that. That's your thing. So I went to a couple of different venues, and the North County Branch Library, 65 Holsett Street in Clinton, liked the idea. And they give us a wonderful conference room. And very private. and that gives us the ability to have a group together and discussed what I wanted to do and my part in this. And then Ruth agreed to be the facilitator. And we've done about maybe four of them so far.
About that.
Mm-hmm. About four of them so far. And they were wonderful. And I will never forget this one woman who came from quite a distance, South Jersey, said to me, "Wow, she is good." And she really is good. You know, you could have someone that's credentialized and written up and all this other stuff, and they don't connect with people.
Right.
Ruth connects with people.
Yes.
And that's the difference, because you can't...
Absolutely.
You can't have a breakthrough unless you have a connection. And what I thought, what I saw was, wow, she can do that. She can touch other people. So.
Well, thank you. That's very generous. Mm-hmm. Very kind.
Yeah. Well, can you tell a little bit about some of your specialties? Because I know we were talking about everything with, you know, Richard and so on. But it'd be nice for everybody to get caught up on what you do. Because to your point, people were at the event at Mariah, and then they were people who came in later who were just listening to you and how you had connected with people. And they were like, "I want to talk to her. I want her to work with me.
Sure.
I want her to work with my husband and couples and all the other things that you do."
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm a licensed professional counselor. That means I have my master's in counseling. I'm also nationally certified as a counselor. And I have been a counselor for about 33 years. Currently have a private practice here in Flemington on Main Street. That's been about 18 years. And the first half of my career, I always say this, the first half of my career was drug and alcohol specific, which is where... Jeannie and I met. Jeannie actually worked for me.
We yes.
worked on some fundraising projects together. And
20 years ago.
And I know we don't look any older than 25, right?
Mm-mm.
So, but when that all ended, I opened up a practice here in town. And so I still do a lot of work with people that are in recovery. Sometimes people need to get into recovery, so I help facilitate getting them into treatment. Sometimes it's when people get out of rehab, they want to continue working on their recovery, they'll see me. I work with people who struggle with codependency, which oftentimes is part of the whole addiction model. I'll work with people who are adult children of addicts or alcoholics or family dysfunction, so I do a lot of that. But I also work with people struggling with depression, people struggling with anxiety, post-traumatic stress issues, obsessive-compulsive disorder, anger management, stress management, grief and loss. So it's quite eating disorders, couples counseling. So I do quite a bit. But I do think one of the benefits, and I remember... her name was Betty Kohler. She founded Crawford House, where Jeannie and I met. And when I started to work there, she said to me, "Working at a halfway house is going to be the most difficult job, and it's going to prepare you for everything." And she was right. She was right. It's amazing the things that I learned working there. So I will always appreciate that, and it's always contributed a lot. But so I do a little bit of everything. We say specializing in addiction, but not only.
But I've got to just say, when you describe all of those different situations, you were starting off the show talking about how it was like known that there was 1 in 4 with a mental challenge.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sorry. I was saying I think it's 3 in 4, and it's just like because of the stigma, nobody knows. But when you mention all of those issues, everybody has something that they're
right.
dealing with. So it's just so great that you guys are getting out there and just saying, you know what, we're going to break this, you know, call it mental wellness, get a checkup. Talk about your oil change thing. I love that.
My oil change
thing. I love it.
I don't know where we're going with this, but.
That's okay. Well, no, because what I say, you know, is like every year we go to the doctor, we get our cholesterol checked,
sure.
we do all of that. We get our car checked, we change the oil, you know, we do all of those things, but we don't do mental health checkup.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, the brain likes to think it's always right.
Mm.
Even when it's wrong, it likes to think that it's right. And one of the best ways to realize it, and that was my show today, putting a little plug in, was about cognitive behavioral therapy,
right.
which is really using logic.
Mm.
So I'm using logic to recognize that my life is out of control, that my emotions are skewed way over the top, my depression and my anxiety, my self-esteem, all of those things. And that if I start thinking in a different way, just by doing that, I can actually start eliminating some of the issues in my life.
Sure. You know, for me, and I was talking about this, Jeannie, early on, for me, I found in my life, my coping skills, and we talked about this at Mariah, were much better in the earlier part of my life than in the later part of my life. And I wonder if that's a commonality or is that just different for every person. I don't find that I bounce back as quickly from things as I did in my 20s and even early 30s.
Well, that's part of that is because things build up.
Okay.
And the other thing is, just as we get older, we're not as flexible.
Right.
You know, so... when we are much younger, we are much flexible. Our brain is more malleable, and so we do bounce back quicker. And when we have unresolved issues, they begin to build up. So, if I have unresolved grief, if I have unresolved anger, then over time it does build up, and then it can turn itself into depression or anxiety.
So it's not necessarily because of the physical age. It's because it's like having a bank account. When you're 20, you only have so much of it, but when you're 50, hopefully you have more.
Yeah.
And that's why at later on in life it can be more difficult. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, can you tell everybody about when your next event is at the library, the North Branch Library? And
yes. Oh, that's actually, Jeannie, a very good point. So our group is called the 100 and Anxiety and Depression Support Group. We meet once a month, again, at the North County Branch Library in Clinton. If you want to call me for more information, it's 908-884-0770, 908-884-0770. Our next date is the 21st, June 21st at 7 p.m.
Right.
One of the things that I want to, and maybe Ruth should speak this more than I do, is that we are offering environment. There's no selling or pretenses. It is a safe environment. And one of the things that was very important to me and then to us as Ruth and I worked on this together is that it's an environment that we all have sort of a credo, if you will, a verbal credo, that whatever happens in that room stays in that room. So you don't have to be fearful that something's going to happen to your job or you're going to, you know, be in a magazine or in the paper or something with saying, oh, wow, I have PTSD. It's a supportive environment. Now, I think, again, the support group is very topical right now because look what's going on with health insurance. How many people even have and can afford health insurance? And if they can, the co-pays for mental health are often astronomical. They're not
completely ridiculous.
No, to me, it's backwards. I think, you know, mental health needs to be at the
top. Right. But, you know,
absolutely. Yeah.
But, you know, for people that don't have resources to be able to go into an environment where they're getting, you know, somebody with such skills like Ruth, an education to sort of feel better and work towards something, I think is just a gift.
It is a gift.
I will say, and I think Ruth will agree to this, we've only done four so far, it is a challenge getting people to the meetings because people have to say, okay, this is who I am. You know, I almost feel, and I'm not going to simplify, but I almost feel that we've watched so many TV shows and movies where people say, I'm an alcoholic. You see that scene where they say, I'm an alcoholic, or maybe even an overeater or something. But saying, you know, I am a depressed person, I think there's much more of a stigma to that mm-hmm. right now. Would you agree to that or maybe not?
Well, I am going to say it really is across the board.
Okay.
One of the things with addiction oftentimes, I'm going to say one of the symptoms of addiction is denial.
Okay.
So it's often pretty hard for somebody to come to the realization that they have an addiction problem, be it to a chemical, be it to gambling, anything like that.
Sure.
But there is a stigma just across the board of something's wrong with me. And so if I'm depressed or have anxiety or struggling with addiction, I think there's something wrong with me. And that term alone is very shame-based.
It is.
So, you know, one of the things I talk with my clients all the time, that there's a difference between guilt and shame. And guilt is I did something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right, so maybe I did something wrong and I'm guilty of that. But shame is there's something wrong with me. There's something fundamentally wrong with me.
Mm.
Now, we have healthy shame, and healthy shame means, you know, I'm not going to walk down the street naked because I have some healthy shame. But there's toxic shame.
Right.
And that toxic shame is when I'm very self-critical, when I don't want to go get help because I'm afraid that I'm going to be judged because I'm already judging myself. And that's toxic shame. It really, it's very painful, and it keeps us from growing and moving forward.
Sure.
And it's often hard to break
through. That's an interesting point. Like, maybe what you guys are trying to do is to break through the toxic shame, where people can just say, I don't care what you think of me.
Right.
I don't want to think of me this way anymore, but I know that you guys are on a mission, and I'd like to be part of that, right?
And here's the best thing that happens. When you go to that meeting and you see three other people that have similar experiences, boy, do you leave feeling, like, relieved,
yeah.
Right?
Well, so, it's true. I mean, that's, what do they say? Misery
loves company.
Yeah, like,
you would, When you're, when you say, all right, let's talk in anxiety, because anxiety is very immediate. When you say to people, I have anxiety and sometimes I shake, and then somebody says, yeah, I was having such bad anxiety when my husband was waiting to come out of surgery, I started to shake. You're like, oh my God, that's normal. I'm a human being. And then the anxiety related to that, sort of your mind sort of says, okay, not so bad. A lot of times with anxiety, I think I built it up myself. But when you take that out of it, the fear out of it, then it kind of falls to the wayside. I mean, I should speak to you on that, but I kind of feel that that's kind of the commonality is what heals us.
I know it's only already 2:56. I want everybody out there to know that we did have an event with both Richard and Ruth at Mariah in Hunterdon County the early part of May. And I have to be honest and say I've never been anywhere within that I got so much information. I learned so much. Totally things I've never even heard about, even though I've been, through the counseling world and everything else. I just encourage everybody who's interested out there not only to go to the author appearance at the Barnes & Noble, both with Richard and with Ruth on this Saturday, June 2nd, Bridgewater, Barnes & Noble, but also to join your group, at least show up at once or twice. It's confidential, and then I'll leave it to you guys to end the show here.
Sure, and I'm going to say if anyone wants to contact me, I'll put my
Absolutely.
Number out there, 908-237-2899. That's 908-237-2899. And you could also follow me on Counselors Chat on Facebook or go to the web, which is alterolcounselor.net. And that's alterol with two L's, counselor.net.
And come visit us either, again, at Barnes & Noble from 11 to 1. In Bridgewater, 319-202-206 in Bridgewater, or come preview one of our meetings. Perhaps you're not the person that's having a problem. Perhaps you have a child that's having an issue and you're afraid they're depressed. Come and listen. Get some support from trained professional.
And don't forget to watch Counselor's Chat every Wednesday at noon when she's hosting, and then also your show of Modern Design.
And also your show, Talented People.
And that's where we're going next, 3 o'clock.
It's a mutual admiration society.
Right. Yes, it is. And thank you all for watching. And we'll be back at 3 o'clock through Jeannie Murphy Public Relations on Facebook talking about the Metro Leadership Summit that's coming up this Friday. Stay with us.
USA Radio News.
Today at the White House, President Trump signed the Right to Try Act, which will give terminally ill patients greater access to experimental treatments. This was a promise the president made during the State of the Union address.
We also believe that patients with terminal conditions, terminal illness, should have access to experimental treatment immediately. It's time for Congress to give these wonderful, incredible Americans the right to try.
A top North Korean official is set to land at New York's JFK Airport today for talks aimed at salvaging a summit between President Trump and North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Congressman David Schweikert of Arizona believes a summit will happen.
We got to sort of work through what we want from them, what they're willing to give us, and keep pushing and keep pushing.
This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
A pair of reports on the U.S. economy are released, and USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes takes a look at them.
The nation's economy grew at an annualized rate of 2.2% in the first 3 months of the year, according to the Commerce Department. That report on GDP matches what experts had projected. When it comes to jobs, the government's report won't be released until Friday, but the figure in Wednesday's ADP private payrolls report says the economy created 178,000 private sector jobs this month. That's 9,000 short of economists' predictions.
Federal officers arrested 156 illegal immigrants and other people eligible to be deported from around the Chicago area over the last 6 days. That's according to Homeland Security. ICE targeted illegal immigrants and legal immigrants whose criminal records made them eligible for deportation. Quick look at your numbers on Wall Street. Currently, the Dow is up over 300 points. This is USA Radio News.